Tanoim that you see at most weddings today are eviscerated Tanoim. They basically say nothing. And the text was drafted by Moshe Feinstein's Atzal, and a number of reasons. One is that the Tanoim that originally were two Tanoim, the Tanoim Rishonim and Tanoim Achronim. Tanoim Rishonim were what you call the time of the engagement, and Tanoim Achronim the time of the wedding. Each one had something to say. If you look in the Nachlas Shiva, you may have it on your online. The Nachlas Shiva talks about these what these Tanoim are. And the Tanoim Rishonim fundamentally, the most important salient feature was a Cherem and a Knas, not to renege on the Shidduch. And the Cherem is a serious thing, so much so that there were those who claimed if you want to break a Shidduch, you should get married and get divorced rather than break the Shidduch. That's an amazing Chiddush, which I don't think we do nowadays. But the Cherem is a Cherem. What's mean Cherem? Aside from the Cherem, some people aren't afraid of Charamim, they're afraid of money. There's also a Knas. And the Knas was a hefty sum. If you some of the statistics, the Knas was a half of the Nadunya. The Nadunya was the Nadan, the dowry. It could amount to a lot of money. And in this text it said, V'acherem lo yiftoros ha-Knas, v'acherem lo yiftoros ha-Cherem. You can't back out with impunity. I'll write the check. You're still in Cherem. And you'll say that I don't want to be in Cherem, but I can't pay the money. It doesn't part of the Knas. Nothing. Very hard to back out of these things. That's what it said. It also says that there's something called an Orev Kablam. In other words, the two fathers would sign, they'd be the ones that had to pay. And in case they wouldn't pay, there was always an Orev Kablam, a Gvir, who stood behind each of them. And if the Bechutin couldn't pay, the Gvir would have to cough up the money. And of course, it says in the Shtar that the Bechutonim obligate themselves to pay back them. The Orev, you shouldn't lose any money, but you know how that is. The kids are a very serious document, which is still being used in many Hasidic circles. It should be on one of your things there, the original Tanoim. So that makes sense when you're making a Tanoim, when they get engaged and they're going to get married at a certain time, they often have the date inside. But that's all irrelevant when you're writing a Tanoim at the time of the marriage. I've never been in a wedding, in my life anyway, where the Chos Tachala backed out at the wedding hall. Maybe Rabbi Steiner's was such a thing. Even Rabbi Stein has this interesting thing. Once they come to the wedding hall, they usually go through with it. You know, cold feet could be. I've heard of cases they back out the week before. Yeah, that yes, maybe the day before. I once heard a case, but once they're at the hall, once they're both there, one of my rabbinic colleagues traveled thousands of miles to a wedding, and Carla never showed up. It's scary. I'm telling you, this is really never happened to me. I never went to a wedding with a chos Carla, didn't show up. But again, so that was that Tanoim. So it much makes no sense to put that all in. They're getting married the day of the wedding. But it's see the Amaratzis, I mean, I don't want to use Amaratzis, too strong of a word, the inability to know what it says, when they present it, so now Moshe's Tanoim became sort of dirigur. You present the rabbi to either fill out or read the classic Tanoim, he's lost. I was once at a wedding, they had the classic Tanoim, and it said, Ayin Kuf, Mitzad Achosan, Ayin Kuf, I guess they didn't know what Ayin Kuf meant. They put this Mechutan's name all over again. That the Mechutan is responsible for himself in case he can't pay the money. You can see how absurd it is? You're Lova and you're who's the R of you? Didn't know? Okay, so that's. Okay, fine. So, let me ask another question. Who has ever been at a Tanoim, official Tanoim read at an engagement party? Or who's ever seen in his life? I have. You have, but these days they don't do it anymore. You know, they call it a vort. Break a plate at an engagement party? I don't think in my life I've ever seen it. The plate was to signify you can't break this up. It's old. It's worse than a glass. I'm going to all this symbolic stuff. So Rav Moshe took that all out, obviously, because it makes no sense whatsoever that you do it the day of the wedding. Okay, out. But there's another thing, which is in the Tanoim Achronim, a very important line, which is as follows. Umachmas idur uktat yinhagu ketakonas shum. I was at a wedding once, a very choshev Rosh Hashiva, really very choshev Rav Rosh Hashiva, really very important person. He got to this thing, I guess he didn't know what it was. Yama Tekatakonas, and he got to Shin Vav Mem, he stopped to know what the Rosh HaTevas were. Do you know what the Rosh HaTevas stand for? Do you know? Yeah, right. More than the Rosh Hashiva. Shpira Vermeiza Magensa. Those are the famous Kilos Ashkenaz with all those ancient customs. Does anyone in this room know what those Takonas Shemur in our context? Anybody have any clue? You have to look it up in Nachashiv. It tells exactly what they are. So Idur, you should know something about. Idur is a euphemism. You know, in some of the modern Hebrew-speaking schools, if someone is absent, what do they call them? Nedar. It's a pasuk in Ishlo Nedar. It's an haftorah. He's absent. But here, it refers to a very long-term absence, otherwise known as death. Absent for good. Chalila b'chas, if the kala dies within a year of the marriage, so it's a terrible thing for the father, lost his daughter, and also lost all his money. But he saved his whole life to give that nadan to the beautiful, wonderful chosin. Nebuch, the kala died, not the chosin's fault, but the chosin keeps all the money, but you give it in. So Rabbi Natam stopped that. That's one of the reasons he's called Rabbi Natam. Because Chazal darshan, if you lose all your money and you lose your daughter, the tam larik kochachem. He said, all the money goes back to the father. Nebuch, he lost his daughter, but at least he has his money back. Reminds me of a story. Happened in the early 70s. A Talmud got engaged to a wealthy girl from out of town, and they filled out the original tanoim, and the guy wrote in it, $100,000 knas. Not today, $100,000, that's pennies, huh? $100,000 then. You do the math, figure what that's worth now. What would you say? First number has to be 2, I think. If not more. We're talking about 1970, 71. You know, it's talking about a long time ago. Right? So maybe $250,000 today, something, I'm guessing something around that amount of money. And then the girl broke up the shidduch. The man was a gentleman, he could afford it. He wrote a check for $100,000 to this fellow. So as a quip, he was really dejected, you know, he was jilted and stilted and morose. I mean, after all, a girl breaks an engagement, it's very, very tough. But you know, as they say, 100,000 spoons of sugar make the medicine go down. So, you know, at least he had that much he had, because the guy was a gentleman and actually wrote the check. There's a whole literature when you're allowed to break a tonight without paying the money. You find out something about the chos and kala, some kind of a mum. We spoke about this mum last time before, at the end, both. But otherwise, you're not supposed to break up a shidduch. So here too, Nebuch, you lose your daughter, you get your money back. Okay, fine. What's ktat? Anybody know what ktat is? It's in the Furush and Nachla Shiva, Simon Tess. Ktat is as follows. It says in the Tanoim that if Chalila v'chas, the way they, you know, the way things are phrased in medieval times, it goes back to the Tekon Hashum, but it was, we find it in print from the Nachla Shiva, it was the Talmud of the Taz. Right, so we're talking about centuries later, but presumably they preserved the least intent of the original ordinance of Shum. Im yase ploni l'ishto dover, so it's blame the man, that they can't live together. Techev yefazer mezonos l'ishto b'sum v'asor z'uvim, right away. And every month that this goes on, the separation, will give a 10 z'uvim, until the Bezdin will, you know, they'll meet in front of Bezdin, and Bezdin will take care of it, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That's what's called ktat. It's called, if you look at it, I'm going to open the Shulchan Aruch, I don't want to stand 10 times now, you'll find it in the Pesachei Tshuva, you'll find it in the Beis Shmuel. On the Ma'am Bekomos, yeah, for this particular segment, I'll open it a little bit. Okay, let's just see something. Let's take a look over here. If you have any Shulchan Aruch in front of you, or on your computers, I don't want to spend too much time, because there's a lot to be said. Let's take a look. Oh, Tikkun Rabbi Natam. This is in Reish. Is Simon Nun Beis Nun Gimel. For some reason, the two got combined. In Siv Dalet. Okay. Oh, Tikkun Rabbi Natam. Mm-hmm. Here we go. What happens? The Chachmei Tzarfas. Shpire reminds of Germany, but okay, France, Germany. If he died, she died, some of the second year half goes back. Here it is, it's Befurish and Ramah. Simon and Beis Gimel, Sif Dalid. Befurish. So it's an automatic thing in those parts of town. The Pischei Tshuva Sidkotin Yud Gimel talks about that as well. It says, you know, Nachash Shiva says, Simon Test, Tzonai Machronim. He says, where does it come from? We don't have it in our versions of Takonas. We don't know. I think it's Takonas Shum. Bechule, bechule. In any event, he quotes over here as follows. As in Poland, in Ashkenaz, it's different. In Poland, it's assumed. In Ashkenaz, not assumed. You have to write it. Fascinating. That's going to come back to that in a second. Fine. Atkan. Why am I spending time on this when no one does it? It's written in the Tanoim, but people don't know what they're signing. I guess it's probably binding. You're tough luck, you know what it says. You sign your lease in your apartment. You know what it says? It's too bad. Right? Coming to that in a second. So this leads me to what I call a prenup. The prenup should be on your, they have it on their screens or something. The fundamental basic paragraph of the prenup is really Nachash Shiva Simon Tess. It's amazing how this came out. Got a little historical background, just to, you know, don't spend too much time on history. My involvement in the prenup began in the year 1990. It's a long time ago. What happened was, just a little history, when I became the Rebbe of the Shul, Baruch Hashem, it's about 45 years ago, I made a resolution that I don't want to let any agunas exist in my shul. And already then it was starting to become a crisis and the rabbanim were powerless to do anything. I said, you know, we have to do something. So I led a charmed life for 15 years, never came to two divorces, they took care of it in court, they didn't bother me, no one came to me. But my luck ran out, as it has to run out after a while. And a prominent member of the community, his wife wanted a get, and she deserved the get. I'm not going into any details right now. And he said he's not going to give the get, he's going to hold her in Aguna unless A, B, or C. I said, oh no, you can't do that. It's not acceptable to me. So he went to Rabbi Rosenblatt of RJC, and this is 1989 yet, and he told him his story. He's a very honest man, a fine man. And the rabbi said, you have to give a get. Went to Rabbi Avi Weiss, he brings to it, same story, you have to give a get. After Sukkot, we wrote him a letter, called him up, you're not invited to any of the shuls. That was my youthful, alright, finish. You're not giving all the rabbis, you have to give, yeah, you're not giving it. We'll stop the services if you come. We'll let him go to some little tiny kind of retiree place. It wasn't Lefich Voidoy, but there were the guys to daven. Okay. 6 months passed, and I was under pressure from the Balabatim. Why am I taking a strong stand? The whole story, not for now. Kids, we were learning Gittin that year. Gittin, yeah, that was tough shit. None of the yeshiva learned Gittin. So before Pesach, I told the Chevra, listen, enough of this. Pilpulinated Mesirah currency, whatever we're doing, we got to figure this one out. You know, Malcolm Shannon Usher, we got to figure something out. So we're going to start learning the Suga end of Gittin, getting Musa, the whole story, after Pesach. Oh, we start learning it. Ha, Kodesh Baruch Hu was so good to us. Rosh Chodesh Iyar, the get was given. Get was given. So that Shabbos, he walks into Shul. It's 2 days later. I told the Gabbai I have to give him Shlishi. The Gabbai says, for 6 months he was persona non grata and I got Shlishi. I said, absolutely. He was non grata. He didn't give the get. He gave the get. He deserved Shlishi. He gave Shlishi. I went over and shook his hand. He wasn't so happy to shake my hand, but I shook his hand. Baruch Hashem, he remarried. She remarried. There's a parasha of getting in the Torah for a reason. Meanwhile, we had started on the sugya, and the first thing I saw, I was looking for new things, was an article which was printed 2 years before, an ear of Tavshin Mem Chesper, of Zalman Chemi Goldberg's Hatzaber, of Tzvi Gartner, who had written it, some kind of prenup. So I didn't know Rav Zalman Nechemia. I don't know if I even know who he was at the time. But Rav Meir Goldwicht, who had just come to the yeshiva for his 2 year stint as a visiting professor, it was Rav Mecharusa, because he was Rav Shlomo Zalman's son in law, and Rav Meir's father was Rav Shlomo Zalman's Gabbat's dog. They were very tight. So he called for me, and I talked on the phone quite a few times. It was very deferential to me. He's like, I go to Lador, and I'm the kid. So I corresponded with him. I had all correspondence for months and months. I finally went to see him during the winter break, January of 1989. Some of you may remember that someone whose funeral was yesterday was a big player in January of 1989. I don't know if it came up in any of these services. That was the Gulf War, January 15th. That was the deadline that Mr. Bush, I guess we could say a blessed memory, gave to the Iranians to pull out of Kuwait, and they didn't. They started bombing. I can tell you stories about that, but I don't, no time for that. Under the gun of that thing, I'm running around to Rav Zalman Nechemia. He says, like, you can't do it just based on what you have to ask another rabbi. Good. Who should I ask? Rav Chaim Tzimbalist from Tel Aviv. He was also from the Gedolei HaDayonim, and he learned to know each other from Chevron. So I called him up, came to meet him in the Beis Din, drove him home. I showed him Rav Zalman Nechemia had said that I'd worked on it now 8 months. Maybe not closer to 9 months. He says, it's no good. I don't want it this way. Says, I want you to do it this way. And turned it on his head. So I drove back to Yerushalayim very dejected. Here I spent 9 months on something. It's like a stillborn child. You know, this 9 months is going to come to naught. Because A wants this, B wants this. So I came to Rav Zalman Nechemia with this. Okay, we'll do it his way. Malkum Gedulaso, Shabbat Hamotzi in Misenusa. Great. His way turned out to be, guess what? Nachash Shimusim and Tess. I don't know whether you remembered it, didn't remember it. Come out the same thing. So I thought that was a gewaldige ride to our prenup, Nachash Shimusim and Tess. Rav Osher Weiss, Shalita, wrote a ringing endorsement of this prenup, but he writes, what I wrote, that Nachash Shimusim and Tess is a raya berurah to the prenup, not so sure it's true, because the prenup, no, we can't say it befarish, but we all know that the fundamental reason is they shouldn't be an aguna. But in those days, people were starving to death. They made him pay 10 zehuvim, so she shouldn't starve to death. Nothing to do with any agunas. I spoke to people to try to figure out what 10 zehuvim was in 17th century Poland. I think I'm right. I don't think it was such a... You needed so much money not to starve to death in those Polans. But either way... So, I finished that back and forth, came back with, in effect, Nachash Shimusim and Tess. Took me another whole year to get the lawyers to make it that should be legal, and back and forth. Went back the next year, January break 1992, was much calmer, no war going on. And I got Chasimus on it from Rav Zalman Nechemia, from Tzimbalist, and from Avadi Yosef. A very major pickup. And I went back to America, got two other rabbanim to sign it. And we did it. That's the history of the prenup in brief. Originally, you probably saw the most recent, I don't know, one of the most recent copies of it. This was new revised, a new time. I hope you got the more recent one. I don't know if, think so. Originally, they put in the name of the Beis Din was blank, and the amount of money was blank, and they started fighting about it. You have to have to standardize it. So Beis Din is Beis Din of America. The amount of money started was $100 a day, and now it's up to $150. Why so much money? That's how much money you need to live. I think that in some communities that I know, you really can't live that. You can't live on that much. The rent and the house and the car and the health insurance and the clothes. We must have clothes. It costs a lot of money. You can't live that much money. Okay, so we can argue back and forth. In my opinion, we did a study because it was a critique by zip code. And the zip code of the Upper West Side and of Riverdale and of Woodmere and of Teaneck, you know, we picked the places that the Anshe Shlomeni are living. It was not an exaggerated sum. Fine. What are the objections to the prenup? I'll be actually as upfront as I can in the limited amount of time we have to give all the objections to the prenup. The most salient halachic objection is its asmachta. That's a significant, that's not a joke. Asmachti means a conditional obligation. So a conditional obligation is not valid. It's just not valid. Asmachta. Asmachta lo kanya. It's a very serious problem. How do you deal with asmachta? So, again, this is found in both in Eben Ezer and in Choshen Mishpat. I don't have the Choshen Mishpat in front of me, but the Eben Ezer I do have, where they dealt with asmachta in the situation that we just described. Simen Nun Sivav. She wrote, Nasas Havtochas the Shiduchim. Right? I mean, if I back out, I pay a lot of money. It shouldn't be an asmachta. They have a whole complicated way how to do it. Some say there's no asmachta by Shiduchim right through. It doesn't apply. It doesn't apply. You can end that to a minute knosis. You collect $1,000 or $2,000. No problem. You do it. Okay? Without going into all the details here, one way out of asmachta, which is discussed primarily in Choshen Mishpat, but a little bit over here in Eben Ezer, is to write in the document, Yikona me'akshav bebezdin choshev. It's a sugya in the second nedarim. The foolish that it works. It works. It may not even be necessary if the amount that's found is not necessarily what we call in our language an exaggeration. If it's an exaggeration, then you need this kunz. As a matter of fact, the Pischei Tshuva, Sifkot and Tes, says, that quotes from the Bar Hetev, it's not an exaggeration. You know why? It's very embarrassing. A broken engagement is very embarrassing. Very embarrassing. Because over here, either motion is not that much, still not an asmachta. Why not? Because you know the classic case? Im over v'lo avir ha-shalem b'metva. Even though it's you don't have to pay meitav, you have to pay beninus. Here too, it's much, much, much more money than it's considered to be an asmachta. You can still get out of that asmachta if you do a kinyan me'achshav bebezin choshev. Shine. So number one, odds we don't consider it to be an exaggeration. We don't want it to be an exaggeration. Because then even if it'll be a binding obligation, it can construe it as a knas. And a knas is a big problem. Aye, the knas is a knas machmas atzmo. That's found in I have the whole sefer in front of me, Eben Ezer. That's found in the Ramah, in Simen Kuf, Lamed Dalet. What about a Knas Machmas Atzmo in Sif Hey? He says as follows. He says, a Knas Atzmo should pater him. But the evidence good. Kibbel of Knossus, like gosh, Levikri Onus, Machmas the Tola, Gita, Medover. He accepted it upon himself. But the chatchila, we shouldn't do it. So we ours is not an exaggeration. We consider ours to be not an exaggeration. Or knas is a support obligation. It's maybe he's not obligated by Torah law. One of the rabbis said in those days, just translate the ksuba to English and make it legalese. So he's obligated to pay his wife. What's the problem? What do you need a prenup for? It's already there. Number one, doesn't say how much. Number two, doesn't say who's going to decide it. And number three, not so posh, you're obligated by Torah law. If you look in the Shulchan Aruch, here in Eben Ezer, Simon Ayin, it says, if the couple splits up, it depends whose fault it is. As over here, Im hoisa lo ktota im balav lo mista lo imo v'am niya mi menu tzorach l'shalim niya mi menu ain't tzorach l'shalim and oish chayv im zonas ishto elok shi imo unless it's his fault. Now go figure that one out. Whose fault is going to be? You know, in America there's no fault, there's no fault car insurance, no fault divorce, no, because to figure out fault is not so easy. She can turn white till they figure out the fault. So the ksuba itself is not going to work. Yeah?
I'm sure it was considered at the time. Why not just draft a different document? Why the ksuba that's not triggered by recalcitrance, which could avoid the asmach and the knas issues, of a mandatory sum which a husband owes his wife?
Every single day. That's Rav Zalman Lechem's original. Every day he's obligated to put her up in a hotel.
And if she's married, she's not.
That's Rav Zalman Lechem's. The reason why Rabbi Tzimbalist did not like that, that doesn't overcome the asmachta problem, it's true, is he figured that's clearly more linked to a get than this way. Why? What's his logic? This way, where the obligation is triggered by a separation, the separation presumptively means that he's no longer paying for expenses. So in his words, it's hegyoni, it makes perfect sense. Calls money living together, he pays for expenses. When they separate, he has to continue to pay for expenses. Nothing to do with the get. Exactly as Rav Asher White said later on, the way you read Nachash Shiva Siman Tes. Whereas if the way you're doing it, it may be phrased in a way to avoid asmachta, but it's clear, all of a sudden she starts speaking Meichel, what's going on over here? That's why he turned it around. You're right. You suffer from the asmachta. My Rabbi Bleich, Shalita, who's worried about asmachta, he once go back to Rav Zalman Nechemya's kind of business.
B'chule, b'chule, b'chule. He was concerned that a little tomorrow I could get Mahusa because it's only invoked later. Is that what Simlis was saying?
Rav Simlis was saying that if it's not something which is triggered by a logical point of time when they separate, then it looks like it's coming only for the get, and it's only for the get, then it maybe it's considered knas, even though that was his concern. Okay, fine. So Rabbi Blaya Shlita is worried about asmachta, and he's a tremendous Talmud Chacham. Nonetheless, other people are also becoming Chachamim, and they said it's not asmachta for a number of reasons. One, as they said, it's Bezen Choshev, actually, it's a whole story, as it's found in Choshev Mishma. And two, if it's not an exaggeration, maybe you don't even need that svara to get out of the problem of asmachta. There are many, for example, Hashalom B'Meitzvah, why is not asmachta? Because it's not an exaggeration. It's not an exaggeration. That's what it costs to live. Slow. So, fine. In his original... Okay.
So, meaning if it's triggered by the change and the fact that he's not supporting her, so he has to provide her now support, what if she's the one who took the house? She's the one who has...
It doesn't... But these are nitty-gritty details of who's paying the mortgage, v'chule, v'chule. This can be taken care of by a bezdin, right? And if she needs the money to pay for the upkeep of the house, right, he may be giving it or not giving it. This we don't know. But in principle, either way, she has to have a place to live. Whether she's out or he's out, she needs a place to live.
Right.
Okay, let me go further.
Did Rabbi address how we get out of the knas issue?
It's not a knas, it's a support obligation. Knas if it's exaggerated. If it's a support obligation, that's not a knas. Let's say there's no prenup. No, before prenup. Torah says, Sheira ksusa v'nos lo yigra. They come to Bezin. Bezin determines for argument's sake, it's his fault. They're separated. Okay, mister, pay up the support obligation to... like he did in the last 20 years. You got to pay her if this is upkeep. Do we say it's a knas? No. The Torah obligates you. In our case, you're closing up a hole. Does the Torah obligate you or not? Depends upon whose fault it is. We're going to have a no fault. He accepts upon himself that even if it's really it's her fault, he's going to pay the money anyway. He's allowed to accept the thing if he wants. Nothing wrong with that. Let me go further. If it's exaggerated, you might be right, it's a knas. If it's not. Let me go on. In the original article of Rabbi Gartner of 1988, Rabbi Yoshev expressed a problem. He won't know what he's signing. So number one, in America, he may well know what he's signing. He's a consult lawyer. Number two, what is the difference? It says in the Shulchan Aruch. It doesn't matter if you know you're signing or not. If you sign something, you can't come and say, I didn't know what I was signing. Samach Vav. Yud Gimel. Amoras Shabbat Garish Amachakach Shelo Haven Mashi Chazem B'Tanayim Abiksuba. Eno Neman. You can't. You have a lease. You can't say you don't know what the lease said. Anyway, right. Rabbi Yoshev had two other objections. One, he thought it's what's called a court. Fakert takes it out of court. And two, he thought that it's going to, the man's going to give a get. Well, otherwise he wouldn't want to give the get, which is of course true. But I don't see why it's an objection. How do I remember the four objections? Because in 1995, a very unusual shidduch between a man from Yeshiva Farakwe and a woman from Hebrew Institute of Riverdale. Figure that one out. And Rabbi Kaufman Shlita, who's now the Rosh Yeshiva's Waterbury, was then the Binal of Farakwe Yeshiva. He's the son-in-law of Rabbi Feivel Cohen. And he didn't know what to do with her. Rabbi Weiss wouldn't let the girl get married without a prenup. So he called me up. I said, I'll write to Yeshver all of the Yoshiva's objections. How do I know what they were? Because after we got this done, I was told to go to Rav Shlomo Zalman. Rav Shlomo Zalman, don't go, you're not going to get anywhere. But they pressed me to go, so Rav Shlomo Zalman said, go to the Dayanim. And Rav Yoshev sent me to Rabbi Morgenstern, and he told me these four objections. So I wrote him to Rav Fivel Cohen, and I faxed it, so I have the original in my hand. Rav Cohen heard all four objections. He's a tremendous Rav Yoshev chosid, as you all know. He told the son, it's okay, you can do it. Asmachti, I knew he couldn't be concerned about Asmachti. I knew it. How do I know it? He wrote a whole book called Midor Lador about Yerusha. It's a Shtar Chatzi Zohar. I can't go into those details right now. It's also here a little bit of evidence. It's mostly in Choshen Mishpah. He obligates himself to a tremendous amount of money, much more than he owns. If the sons are not going to follow his last will and testament. And he writes there in the Sefer, it's not a smach, because you do it with Kinyan Me'achshav, Bezal Choshev. I know I had him on that one. I asked him to sign my prenup too. He said, it's okay, I'm not going to sign. And Rabbi David Cohen said the same, and I said, okay, I'm not going to sign. You know how much bloodbaths have been in Chaim Berlin before and after? You cannot be massive what's going on. I don't know why people don't sign this thing. In Lakewood, you know how many bloodbaths are going on right now as we speak? How many agunas there are? You can't even imagine it. A dentist from Lakewood once called me up to get the prenup there. He says, within 5 blocks of my house, there are 6 agunas. I'm not sure his definitions, but kids said, it was in my youth, we said there were no divorce in Lakewood. It's probably true. It was a much smaller town. Everyone was really, really, really devoted to Torah mitzvah. So there are not too many divorces in that community. Not for now. That's just sociology. Right. The kids are, so we're moving right along with this prenup. We had to tinker with it a little bit. It was tested, of course, as you could expect. It was ruled constitutional in Connecticut because it's a secular document. Fine. In Maryland, the following case happened. A woman asked for a get. The man said, okay, I'll give you a get today. She said, oh, well, let's go to Beis Din. It took 3 months to get to Beis Din. And they said, I'll give you a get today. No, let's finish in court. It took 3 years to finish in court. After he finished, gives the get. He gets a nice love note. $100,000 in back support. So went to our Beis Din. The Beis Din had a split decision. One dayan said nothing. Come on, he was willing to give that the first day. Two said, well, how do we know? We didn't come to Beis Din yet. He has to give $10,000 for the 3 months, not 100 for the 3 years. What happened? We have an our Beis Din appeal. They both appealed. She wanted 100, he wanted nothing. And I was the appellate judge. And I ruled, want to give a guess? Nothing. Come on, nothing. So she went to secular court on the grounds of irrationality. And the court in Maryland said, not only is it a rational decision, it's a great decision. So it was confirmed in the Maryland court. But we put in, to avoid that problem in the future, that this only kicks in if she sends him a notarized note that she intends to collect the money. For us, in advance. You can't come 3 years later and say, I want this. To get rid of those wise guys. There's only one problem left with this prenup, which is what about her earnings? In many cases, she's earning a fortune of money, much more than $150 a day. And if the earnings belong to him, which they do, as you probably are aware, so then it's garnished. It's a wash. So we write that he waives his right to earnings for this period of time. The problem is the waiver is not so simple because the Gemara in Ksubas Pei Gimel says you have to give the waiver between Erisin and Nisuin. He told me Rabban Lichtenstein Zatzal once had a prenup and he made him sign it between Erisin and Nisuin. In Israel they signed a Ksubas between Erisin and Nisuin. So he signed a Ksubas then, he signed a prenup then. Okay, fine. But it's not practical so much in our country. So we have a line that you considered your murder hodas bad that you said it again pineris in the suan. I how can you have hodas bad in the future? The sma seems to say that it works. It's Rav Zalman Lechevi had a sma siman lab in choshen mishpat. And the real truth is that according to most authorities, he's not entitled to earnings anyway. She works harder than she normally does in the house when she's supposed to knit, and she knits more than she's supposed to knit, that's called hadafa. They are tchak. According to Rova Poskim, he's not entitled to that. Kavachoma, she works out of the house, which is not required to do at all, he's not entitled to that. So that's why B'kitz and Nimritz, things are moving along, and people start making objections. The Rav Yashiv objects as smachta. What about what I said? Rav Yashiv knows kol ha-Torah kul. Everything. So, we discovered a psak of Rav Yashiv, it's on Yomar HaMakomos, Kovitz Chuvis, Kufsa HaMagimel. Rav Yashiv writes that he thinks that Kinyan Me'achshav Bezlechosh only works to avoid the problem of smachta by a hakno, by a transfer of property, not by his chayvus, not by an obligation. And here we're talking about an obligation. So of course, l'shita so, this whole thing won't work. L'aniyas da'iti, Rav Yashiv Zatzal was right according to the Rambam, 100% right, but not according to the Shulchan Aruch. And you can't say Kimli like the Rambam, even if you're a Sephardi, Kavachom, and Ashkenazi. Can't go into all the details right now. But that's what I think. Rav Yashiv doesn't agree with me, so why didn't he come out against the opinion? He was against it. You will never find, to the best of my knowledge, any scrap of paper with Rav Yashiv's signature on it against Aprina. And Rav Yashiv knew how to come out against things. Oh, did he know? So why did he come out against this? Because I smiled at him when I saw him. No, that's not the reason. There's another tshuva of Yashiv. Kuf Samach Gimel. One is an aleph, one is a base. He has the following kasha. Every ksuba, every tosefes ksuba is asmachta. We'll get to ksuba the last year, 2 weeks. Every ksuba is asmachta. If you get divorced, I'll give you not only what's coming to you, a few dollars, I'll give you hundreds of tens of thousands of dollars. It's asmachta, doesn't pay to get divorced. That kasha is asked by the Erech Shai. And the answer given is as follows, based on the Gemara, famous Gemara, you may have seen it in ksubas or in Kiddushin. Kama tanos lebincha, kama tanos lebincha. Om de vikitshu, hein hein adrama nikne b'amira. You don't need a kinyan. So the Yashiv quotes from the Erech Shai, if you don't need a kinyan, we mean asmachta lo kanya. Asmachta lo kanya means it's not a kinyan, you don't need a kinyan. So anything which is done in the mode of prenups, cannot fall because of asmachta. How do you like that? That's my libi omali, that's Rabbi Yashiv didn't come out against, because his own tshuva that he wrote would not enable him to come out against it. Interestingly, Rav Tzimba List wrote a letter which was published recently by Rabbi Gardner in something called Tvunos. Tvunos is like a kind of a Yeshurun, another version, where he said, his letter was in my file how many years? 25 years, and no one had seen it. So he printed it, where he says, the Divrei Gaonim say, if you write in the document, Beferish, that you know, not to be part of Eretz Machta, not to say you write the Lokas Machta, that doesn't help. You write Beferish, then it overcomes the smacht, and he writes in his letter, no one disagrees with the Divrei Gaonim that he saw. So we put that in recently as well. Then, a fellow named Shapira, who lived in Beitar, wrote a whole bunch of articles to come out against the prenup. He went to Rav Sternbuch, and Sternbuch wrote against the prenup Beferish, but by name, v'chule. Okay. So, you know, I was in Eretz Yisrael, it was 3 years ago, I went to Rav Sternbuch with Rabbi Gartner, and Rabbi Sternbuch's two sons were there. I had a son-in-law and a grandson there. It was a Friday afternoon. And we tried to explain to him that his tshuva was based on a misconception. The first line of his tshuva is, the Ramah writes in Kuf Lamed Dalet, which says Dalet, Knas Atzmo is okay. That's the basis of this prenup. Well, it's not so okay for reasons A, B, C, and D. We told him, the Derech HaKavod, that's not at all the basis for this prenup. Not at all. Then he asked, how can there be so much money? So much money has to be a knas. So we said, no. I have statistics to show that that's what it costs to live. He says, well, what if they don't come from such a high standard of living? What does he have to do? He has to give the higher of the two sums. It says, Mefurash Gemara. Olimo v'enu yoredesimo. The higher of the sum of her family's lifestyle and his present income lifestyle. The higher of the two. So you marry a rich girl, 150 is probably not even enough. If you marry a poor girl and you're also poor, we told him, we can reduce it. The bezin can easily reduce it. We even put in the language explicitly in the more recent, as here and above circumscribed. Most people don't know what that means. It means in the top line it says, he's mischayev to kichos given you, doyen. And what that means is by reference, the higher of those two sums. Right? But more than that, not. But then he says, what if he can't pay? He doesn't have enough money to pay. So Rabbi Gartner responded, what do you mean there's enough to pay? He could easily get rid of this obligation. How? Give a get. There's a real misogyny in the Baal Chov. You don't take a person's shirt away when he has to be able to eat. But here, we're not saying, we give you an easy option. Just give the get, you have plenty of money to eat. So here Rav Yerushalmi did not, he heard it. Bekitza wrote the protocol. I wouldn't go to Rav Shturmich himself. That would be not nice. I went to his two sons who were there. Will you please sign it? This is what happened. And they didn't sign. So I signed, or I got the sign, but I don't know how useful that is, but that's a Ma'aseh Shehayah. Okay, so that's the prenup. I very much advocate the prenup. I think the rabbi decided we should bring it up when he meets the couple. He has to meet the couple. I spoke last Thursday, a week ago, in the National Council of Israel Rabbinic Training Program. There must have been 40 people in the room. I'm guessing. Something like that. I said, okay, how many of you, most of them married, did you meet, you and the Kala met with the Rosh Hashiva, with the Masada Kiddushin before the wedding? Only one person raised his hand. It's only an accident they happened to meet him socially or something like that. I said, how many of you were married by Rabbanim, Shul Rabbanim, or by Rosh Hashivas? Or Rosh Hashivas? That's the problem. Rosh Hashivas, they come to the wedding, they come and they leave, and then they have no achrayas for anything. They don't even meet. How do you know they're allowed to marry each other? We had a whole shmooz, we spent hours. Who said they got allowed to marry each other? He doesn't know. He never checked it out. Nothing. But we love all of our shashivas. Luckily, there's usually a shul rabbi in the background who takes care of a few things when no one's looking, Baruch Hashem. In Europe, the Shtat Rav had the lock on Siddur Kiddushin. Rabbi Elberg, Zayisik, always complained, what's going on over here? They took all their prize away from the Rabbanim to Rosh Hashiva. They don't know what they're talking about. They never heard of Shum. They never heard of this. They don't know. They know about a Shtikl Torah of Chaim Brisker in the Bubbis or in Yavamis. They don't. That's their specialty. That's not for now. But Mitzvah, when you'll be Mitzvah, you'll know some of the more basics, at least from this mini-series. Mitzvah, you'll learn much more on your own. Fine. So this is the idea of the prenup. I think it should be signed at the initial meeting, convince the people they should do it. Now, many women didn't want to sign it. Why? Wise guys. They want the cake and eat it too. They want to go to court to get a better settlement, and they want to get from the bezdin. Harasachta v'gam yarashta. You can kill him in court, and you want to get the bezdin, should tell him to give a get. Okay. So they didn't want to sign it, even though it's primarily for their benefit. So the question became, are you allowed to write in the document that Bezdin will take into account secular law? As long as he agrees, if they both agree, what could be wrong with that? So Rabbi Gartner printed in Yeshua in a letter from Rabbi Zalman Nechemi, there's nothing wrong with that. You agree. Oh, so there are those who went ballistic. How can you do that? It's against the Chumash HaRashba, quoted by Beis Yosef and Choshen Mishpat. It's a terrible, terrible thing. A much more careful read of the Rashba, you have to read carefully because the Beis Yosef only quoted half the Chuvah, unfortunately, in the end of Simil Chavov, and the Rabba quotes in Shin Samach Tes. If you read carefully, you'll see it's not true. The only time the Rashba said that is in Yerusha, because in Yerusha we do not apply the principle of Masna Mashkasa B'Torah. It's considered like the Isa V'Heta. That's when the Rashba went ballistic against those who were writing that way. But if it came to Yerusha Sabal, which you can make it tonight, Kol Tanai Shebamam and Kayim. That's what would apply over here as well. But just to play it safe, we didn't want to start up with people. We didn't write down the law of New York State or the law of California. We wrote down their equivalent. New York State's equal distribution, California's community property, 50-50. And we gave different choices. Halacha, California law, or New York law. Again, both found coming from UCCs without relations to the state. Recently, we just stopped it. We put in the middle one, which is equal distribution. The Bezdin can, if they so desire, take into account equal distribution. Doesn't say they have to. They can. And this way, it gives the Bezdin more latitude to do what they want. And the women, since they feel that the secular distribution is written in the document, there's no guarantee, or most people want to sign it. So that was put in recently as well. I recommend every couple should sign it. If you haven't signed a prenup, you can sign a postnuptially, although I'm not so happy with it for various reasons. Fine. In New York State, it has to be notarized, but we pulled a shtick, and we got a law passed, believe it or not, in Albany, that any rabbi in New York is a notary for purpose of the prenup. So get what your rabbi say, get your smicha, get your klaf, your shenem, come on, a notary for the purpose of the prenup. And make sure to notarize it, because in a case where he didn't notarize it, and the judge paskined that the arbitration part was valid, but the obligation was not valid, and it caused a lot of grief. So make sure that you sign it as a notary.
Well, just, I've been asked before, is the prenup enforceable in terms of the Knas penalty if they're in divorce proceedings, but divorce proceedings take a year or whatever, based on wherever they are in the divorce proceedings?
It's not a penalty, it's a support obligation. Now, slowly. In theory, if the wife insists on this amount of money being paid every day, she has a right to do that. How that will affect her proceedings in court of law, I can't predict. Every lawyer is different, every judge is different. She's certainly entitled to the money. She may be saying, you know what? I'm in court. I'm the vater of the money for right now. She may say that. And after a year when they finish the get, the court still won't give the get. She says, oh, and I want the money. She can do that if she wants. It's not irrevocable. You know, the fact that you're mevata today does not mean you're going to be mevata forever. So every single case is different. It is true that some said that this is worthless because the court's going to make him give her that much money anyway. So what's the point? Number one, not right now. And number two, not necessarily. So that's why there are cases where it won't help at all, the prenup. Either he's very, very poor, he's judgment proof. Yes, it's true. I owe you $150 every day. But ainly. Number two is a multi-billionaire. He'd love to keep her in prison for 120 years at the mere price of $150 a day. Nothing would make him happier. So in those two extreme cases, it's not going to work. I agree. It's not a cure-all situation. But it certainly works in many cases. We've seen it work. And it's a very important element, in my opinion. And I think that this has precedent. It's called a shum, as I told you. I think the basmach, the pram, I think has been covered in many ways. Many ways it's been covered. The mechila of the earnings also, in a number of ways, there's always room for improvement. The biggest impediment to the prenup, I'll give you I'll tell you right now what it is. Inertia. Well, they didn't do it yesterday, they're not going to start doing it today. Or in other language, chodesh osim in a Torah. It's not chodesh, it's yosha noshin, takona shum. It's almost 1,000 years old. If I'm right, anyway. That's the precedent for this idea. So, it's an unfortunate thing that the absence of prenups has so much bloodshed and so much human travail. It really is a crying shame. We're trying to get it, you know, use more widely. If you don't use it, you're proceeding at your own peril, at your own risk. And I want to tell you one more thing. In my view, it's good for the man as well. It saves him from his worst instincts. Right now, he loves her. They write a prenup. They tell you which bezin to go to, how much money it's going to cost. And later on, when he hates her, he wants to kill her, the $150 there will be an impediment, disincentive to try to do such a thing. There was such a thing called the reciprocal prenup, which she obligates to him. I don't like it because there's no precedent for it, for her having to support him. I was told there's a ksuba which was signed last week by someone from Five Towns. In the ksuba itself, it says, I will support you, Kilchos Benos Yisrael. There's no such thing in Benos Yisrael. There's no obligation like that. So Rabbi Bilit Shlita refused to go and told us his rabbinic said not even to go. Okay, so the same way I don't like it in the ksuba, there's mamish. I don't like it so much in a prenup either. I can't stop it. We have a version of that on our file for those who want to do it. But it's not a chatchila as was discussed already way back when. In Israel, there were those who want to use a prenup. They want our prenup with Dafka, and I don't blame them for wanting our prenup. We have one. And the price is there $75 a day, which is what it costs to live in Ramat Bet Shemesh, not in Batei Ungarim. You know, again, we're talking for our kind of people. Some of the Haredi Rabbanim said, who are our friends, said, you know, it's not right, the Bezdin of America. Because that's, you know, mostly YU Rabbanim, and it's Chosn Kal, not from YU. It's not fair. So I came up with a new idea. There's a Midwest version of our prenup. We have three Dayanim in Eretz Yisrael, who, in case it comes up, we have to have a Bezdin, right? So in Bezdin, we have Rabbi Gartner himself, and two of the Rabbanim who are our alumni, Rabbi Mann, Rabbi Jacobowitz, so you may know, big Tamid HaChamim. And here, I came up with another idea. Midwest version. Who the Midwest version? Rabbi Senderovic, Shlita, who's one who raised the objection in the first place. He's in Milwaukee. And Rabbi Shmuley First, who's a good Rav. And Rabbi Yonah Reis. The Midwest version of the... You can live in New York and have a bit sign the Midwest version. You want a little more of a Haredi bent. We make sure Rabbi Reis is there to keep order, you know, and make sure it's legal. But the two out of the three are not from our yeshiva. So we have different versions. I can tell you stories all day, but it's time for mincha. We got a little bit of a taste of the tanoim and the prenup. Next week, Mr. Shem, the real shia is next week. See the kiddushin. So that's Mr. Shem next week. Okay.